dieser Film. So, just to remind you where we are. So, last time we had Narrative Technologies as a team, Wessel did that. Today, we look at STS and non-modernism as an approach, and then the next lectures we continue the approaches, critical theory and feminist theory, analytic approach, and then we'll have some selected topics in January. So the lecture on romanticism and technology, this should be 9th of January. So the approaches before the Christmas break, and then afterwards we'll have the selected topics. Okay. Today, science and technology studies. So this is something that's relatively recent. It's in, within the field of social sciences, but it's very relevant to philosophy of technology because they actually studied it from social science perspective. And it started a little bit from the sociology of knowledge and sociology of science, and was a reaction against certain approach there. Where first of all, there wasn't so much attention to technology, and second, there was, I would say, yeah, in sociology of science, there are different kinds of topics. It's more about how to do science often, and a bit less about the concrete materialities that are in place there. It's an interdisciplinary field, so it's not only people from sociology, but also historians, some philosophers who are closer to STS, anthropologists. And so, in the beginning, it was still framed in terms of scientific knowledge, and then it shifted more towards technological systems and society. So not only science and society, but also technology and society. That was kind of a move. It comes from a more constructivist approach within science studies, where you question a value-free science, not totally objective science, where you see science and technology as socially embedded enterprises. So it's not only just a field, but there's one approach, dominant one, that sees science and technology and society as very much connected, rather than as value-free enterprises. There's also a link to public decision-making to history, history of science, first in sociology of science and then history of technology. So these fields of the history, sociology, and philosophy of science, and then the sociology of scientific knowledge are connected to it. And again, that's historically because it was a reaction against those fields. We're going to also look at technology, and we're going to look at materiality, especially also in innovation processes. So science is really was the sociology of science was about first very theoretical and then afterwards going to the lab, but here it's also going to the context where innovation takes place. So in more detail, we can look at sociology of scientific knowledge. Sociology, as opposed to philosophy of science, especially at the time, was looking at actual experiments also, not only at the theories. And the strong program there goes into this constructivist direction. So it's really sees these beliefs there as something that emerges in the practice rather than as being true or false as such. So it's a different way of looking at science. It's saying, okay, you have there these claims made, like, but how did these claims come about? And so constructivism is then also applied to technology, the social construction of technology. So how does human action, how does what people do in the laboratory, how does this shape technology, and not so much technology as something that that shapes what humans do. So it's again against deterministic thinking. Think about the Heidegger, Weber, and so on, who were often interpreted as saying that that technology determines us. So what the social construction of technology is doing then is to say, okay, we have now a particular technology, for example, the bicycle, but how did this come about? How and why did we accept that particular technology in society and not another one? So why did designers choose it? And also why did we in society accept this technology rather than other technology? And a seminal work there is from Becker and Pinch on the social construction of facts and artifacts. The facts refer to the more, let's say, the science, whereas the artifacts is the technology. The technology in the lab where the technology is developed. It's also influenced by historical analysis. For example, Becker and Pinch, they write about a work by Simon Schaefer on the air pump, something that's also used by Bruno Latour, by the way. We will talk about that later. And so they're interested like in this history because historical accounts, they exactly bring in this time perspective and see it more, see more science as a process, and a process in which these concrete material artifacts are used. So the idea is that first in this developmental processes you have various options, various directions where a certain development could go. But then after a while you reach closure, meaning that there's one kind of design, one kind of product, one kind of technology coming out of this. And the way they develop their argument, Pinch and Becker, is to say like, okay, in science we already had the idea of interpretive flexibility, so that once you have findings, these can be interpreted in various ways. So it's also more constructivist thinking. It's less about there's this one truth, but it's about making of truth, so to speak, making of these scientific findings. And in sociology of knowledge, the idea was that then you have these social mechanisms that limit the flexibility in the sense that there are only some options and at the end one option that remains. And that's called closure. So that's the model they use, but then they applied that model from sociology of knowledge, of scientific knowledge, to technology. And they discuss the development of the bicycle. And as you know, there have been at some point in history, there have been different kinds of designs of bicycles. So the bicycle we know from today, with the two wheels equal, for example, is one particular design that made it. But at some point there were different designs, and one of them is this this bike, for example, with a huge wheel in the front. So and the way they see this is that there are all these different different choices to be made and different options, and then there's going to be one design chosen. So in retrospective, of course, the history of technology and also the history of science, but here it's the history of technology, is written as a kind of linear process. Like first there was A, then there was B, then there was C, then there was D, and in the end there is the thing we know today. For here the bike we have, but here in the multi-directional model, the authors explain why some variants of this design, why it kind of died and others survived. So it's a kind of quasi-Darwinian thinking here. But it's the way this is done is by social selection. So the social scientists and the thing that these social processes, that they shape the choices that are made. In particular, certain groups of people have then more influence than others, more power than others, you could say, to push through their interpretation. And so these social groups can also include engineers and designers, but the whole point is that it's not just that there is this kind of platonic concept of the bike, which then suddenly gets instantiated. Yeah? So there's a making of, and this making of is a social process. So there are all kind of problems and solutions with artifacts at particular moments, and this is the selection in that is shaped by the social. So there's an artifact, and then there are all these social groups around it, and these social groups, they may push for different solutions to the problem. Today you can also see that, for example, the development of the but the anticonception pill for men, for example. There are various social groups that want to influence this and want to decide what is going to be. So there are always the kind of social struggles around certain technologies. Here the claim is that this is always the case. It's always the case that the making of technology, that this is something that's influenced by social groups. So social groups means, next to, I would say, the engineers and designers themselves, the social groups, they look at it's mainly the users also, and then also, for example, people who write about the technology. Think also about Google Glass, for example. Google Glass looked like a technology that kind of worked, but then the media said, like, well, it's not, this is ridiculous, or people started to on social media to say, like, they called it, what was it again? They gave a certain name for it, which ridiculed it. And so there were all kind of influences also on this, and so we don't know, will there be something coming out of this? What kind of further options will be taken in the development of that kind of technology? But in any case, it's clear that this development is also shaped by what all kind of people think about it, what they write about it, and by users doing things about it. Some users showing that it's very cool, for example, some users ridiculing it, by making other kind of YouTube films. So this is a social process. It's not just happening in a lab or in a particular company. So in a way, if one would then analyze this specific design problem, so I could relate this also to what these different groups do in society. So here they made a scheme with all these different groups and artifacts, and how this led to this particular bike. And so when we have then in the end a certain design, it's not only because the designers are ready with it, or the engineers are ready with it, the scientists say that this is the best design. No, it's also because the all these social groups see their problems solved, and see this, the design of the bicycle in this case as solving these problems. So it does see this artifact in the wider social context where these different groups take influence on it. So far, so good. Are there any questions about this history of STS to understand what social construction of technology is?
Yeah. The invention itself, I mean, they influenced, in my understanding, they influenced the inventor, the designer, who then shapes the product or whatever, he creates the technology, the way he thinks would benefit this world. So, I mean, of course you can apply modifications to your bike. So, but when I buy my bike from a retailer, I have to get used to what I buy.
Yeah. So, as far as I understand it, I mean, I would also, I would stress the humans in this, but the way their analysis goes is very much blending out the individual user here. So it's very much stressing the social groups and the context. And the artifacts, indeed, the material artifacts, but it's kind of blending out a little bit the individual use of technology, and even the individual designer at that point. Today in STS there is attention to individual designers. Yes.
I was thinking maybe an example is the iPhone SE that was very much like made because there was complaints about how they didn't like the people didn't like or. Big group of people didn't like the new design, and then they made the size of the smaller iPhone again, like newer form, but it's the same size. So back to like going back to a design.
Okay, what was it? Which model was it?
So when they made the iPhone 6, people were complaining that it's too big.
Yeah.
And then Apple came out with the iPhone SE, which is the same size, but it has a faster processor.
Right. Yeah. So then it's responding to what users. And there is also there is a relation to also usability studies and things. So that, in this case, one could, as a social scientist, and analyze like what kind of groups and exactly push this or something. But it's a good example for how design is not something that even in the case of Apple, it's pretty much top down, I would say, or pretty much like we decide how we design it and then. But still, they take into account these things, or not like with the whole button. Yeah.
Do they also take into account the role of advertising?
This role of advertisement, I can't remember that this was a part of the of Baker's and opinion Baker's analysis, but it could be very easily included here. Yeah. Because advertisement, of course, not so much advertisement itself as a force, but maybe more as representing the interest of certain groups, shaped by the very social. But for sure, this would fit in it because it also puts it in context. It could also be that in the advertisement that the meanings that are used in the advertisement also relate to certain groups rather than others. Maybe a company a tech company like Apple or Google or so, maybe they're interested in reaching a particular audience, a particular group of people, of users. And so they will, in the advertisement, they will stress the values of that group, right? So it's just that here, in this kind of particular approach in STS, the stress would be really on the design process itself. But it, there's no reason why an SDSer couldn't take into account also advertisement as one of the factors. Any further questions? Just have a think about how this could work. I think what before I go to Latour, I want to say that this is, of course, this is not philosophy, but you see that I want to stress that there are links. First of all, there's links to the big questions of philosophy of science and epistemology. Yeah, about what you know, what is truth and falsehood, what is science, what should science do. There's a clear link there because in the historical development of STS they responded to this tradition in sociology of science. And second, for philosophy of technology there is also a link because in the previous sessions we discussed post-phenomenology, and post-phenomenology was part of this empirical term. Now, if you want to go more empirical, then one thing to do that is to also at least collaborate with and take advantage of the findings of the social sciences who are more empirical. And also go to the lab, for example, right, to see how, in my case, robots are developed. So if you want to be more empirical, then you could go directly to see how this artifact is designed. We could also have social scientists who study this in a methodological way, like what is happening in the lab, how does the development of this particular artifact come about. So then they would actually want to be in that lab where, you know, Facebook, Google, and so on, where technology development is happening, and see how this works as a social process, both social within the lab and like here with the different groups that also influence the design. So that's why this is important to introduce in a course about philosophy of technology, because it is part of this this more empirical side to also interact with STS. Then someone also from the social sciences, but at the same time I would say a thinker, right? Someone who also does conceptual work is Bruno Latour, and he also is part of this STS community, but also anthropology as one of the disciplines of science studies and sociology studies. In his case, also first science studies and then more the technology. And he comes from this anthropological background, and that's interesting because he also brings some methods and some ways of thinking from anthropology to the question concerning technology. So there's his view in We Have Never Been Modern, which I will emphasize, but is also very, very known for actor network theory. So that's the kind of two sides of his work, which I will focus on here. So I found, I will start with We Never Have Been Modern, and mainly focus on that because I find it an interesting way for philosophers also to think about the social, which you normally don't have if you think of the social in a classic sociologist kind of way, or which you don't have if you don't think about social at all. Some philosophers just don't think about it. And also I would say it's interesting to understand technology from what I would call, based on this book, a less modern view. So let's look at this book, We Have Never Been Modern. So his starting point is that there are all these matters of public concern, and matters could be taken literally here, because all this involves not only humans or culture, but it also involves things, it involves nature. Think about modified foods. There's a natural aspect to it, but also there's an artificial aspect to it. The plants are modified, for example, to be resistant against a certain a biological organism that destroys the plants. So then, in that case, there's nature and there's artifice. In global warming, the whole problem of global warming, there's nature in there. Temperatures of the earth are rising, but it's also about our technologies. It's about oil and fossil fuels in general that we burn. So it's about these things, and it's about nature. This is already the way I talk about this now is already more Latourian, because Latour noticed that in modernity we make strong distinctions between nature and culture. We make also a distinction about the knowledge of things, which is the domain of science, you could say, and engineering on the one hand, and on the other hand it's about power and human politics. So we make this strict distinction. And this kind of modern distinctions that he wants to question, and his claim is not that we should get away from them so much, but rather that we are already less modern than we think. So we talk about it in these terms, but in practice, he says our problems and our solutions are less modern. So. To understand this, it's again good to look at these problems. So think about again these foods that are modified or which are all kind of things are done to it. There are problems that you can't say that it's only about science, but it's also heavily discussed. Think in general about genetic modification already for many years. This is something discussed not only by scientists but also by politicians, by humanities people, and people can be really passionate about a certain view of this. Think also about the classical bioethical issues concerning euthanasia, for example, or abortion, where these discussions are about ethics, which is usually categorized in the realm of culture and humanities and so on. But at the same time, these questions arise because there are developments in technology, medical technology, for example, that show, for example, the development of the fetus, or they show that in science it's now possible to keep this very early born child alive outside the body of the mother. So there are scientific developments here and ethical questions, philosophical questions that intersect. So again, it's also there are these various what Latour would call hybrids. So modernist distinctions don't seem to work for these. But nevertheless, with these distinctions, moderns try to keep things separate. He uses for this the word purification. So we create these distinct ontological zones. We create these different categories. Because we like to keep them separate as moderns. But in practice, you could say that they are not. Separate, they're mixed in this hybrid practice and this hybrid teams also. So here this is a more graphical representation of that. So on the one side you have the in the modern view you have the nature, and on the other side the human culture. And modernity tries to purify by keeping these separate, But then there are actually hybrids, there are also networks, and it's also why it comes with actor network theory, or why this can in hindsight be interpreted in this way. So the claim is like this is what we, you know, what we think we're doing, but actually we're doing this. We're doing this hybrid work, and networking. So he says it's what we do as moderns here is unsuccessful. So our paradox is that we like to purify, that we like to forbid hybrids, but there is interbreeding, there is hybridity. So this is a paradox. So I think that the outcome of this is that, or here for this quotation, Latour thinks that the outcome of this that you have to kind of represent then these hybrids. So he sees a problem that in politics these hybrids are not represented, because politics is supposed about it's only supposed to be about humans, about human choices, just as ethics is often seen as about humans only. But he says we need this connection between politics and science, between society and science. And so these hybrids and these monsters need to be represented. And for that he has the idea to have a democracy that's extended to things, to in a way let these things speak. So he says now they're kind of, you could say, locked up in the realm of science, but we need to talk about them in politics. And we're already doing that, because we can't, things like climate change, we can't just keep this out of politics. So the science is coming into politics, and the politics is coming into science. A very good example for this is actually climate change, the specific discussions and also scandals. For example, there was a university that had faked results or something like that, and so a lot of people reacted about that. In general, also think about this, the international climate panel committee or something. This is politics, right? So they want to have so much. They advise certain measures, and they say something about the climate change problem. But at the same time, they're scientists also, so they have to say something political. But they say this as scientists, so both science and politics are mixed up. You can't just say these are only scientists. No, there's a panel, and it has implications for policy. But neither can you say that these are only politicians, because they deal with the matters of science. So science is here not discussed as perhaps some philosophers of science would like it to be discussed. No, science is actually here. There's this hybrid between science and politics. A monstrous hybrid, but this monstrous hybrid is something that, from a more post-humanist perspective, like Latour, is not problematic. From a modernist perspective, it is problematic. Yeah. So this is about how do we react to this? So Latour sees all these kind of entities, non-human and human, and all these hybrids everywhere. So this separation work continues. Yeah. So in modernity, it continues. But then there's another way of seeing this. And here actually, he also refers to this to the history of science and to the history of political philosophy. So in a way, to reinforce or to encourage us to think in hybrid terms, he connects what a natural philosopher in the past, today you would say scientist, Boyle did, with what Hobbes writes about. Hobbes writes about political power. So there's scientific work and political power. He uses that throughout the book to show how there was modern thinking, but then also how at the same time in the laboratory these hybrids were formed. And so to talk about the science, this is also the book that influenced Becker and others. Shapin and Schaffer, Leviathan and the air pump. So again, in historical analysis, which is about the separation of science and politics, but a separation that then doesn't work. So on the one hand, there's this language about power and politics from Hobbes, and in Boyle, there's, as a scientist, there's experiment, there's nature. So Latour shows that and interprets this book from Shapin and Schaffer to say, like, well, modernity was created there because you have these people writing about things in a very different way. You have different practices, it seems, but actually it was not separate. It was never separate. So when it comes to modern, he shows that on the one side, Hobbes kind of voided the experimental work, the work of the scientist, whereas Boyle talks about his work in a different way that actually avoids politics. So both try to keep in order this modern distinctions. But the problem is that it says that doesn't hold up, and then you have all kind of descriptions of that in terms of paradoxes. So nature is seen as not a human construction, and society is totally our construction. And so, if you do this from the other side, nature is constructed in the laboratory. You see there what the scientist does, and you can also recognize society is surpasses us, that we don't have complete control of this. So one can, in this way, one can question the modern distinction. So modernity then is the outcome of this history of various purification processes, and against that, Latour says, like, well, actually, there has been all along there has been this mediation and hybridity, this is, he links this also with Haraway, who of course also would let in the cyborgs, the monsters, and so on, because they're also hybrids. So in post-humanist thinking, this hybridity is not a problem at all. And in terms of other isms, so you could say Latour is post-humanist, but he's not post-modernist, you could say, because post-modernism was very much about text, and Latour also accuses post-modernism as being too romantic, going back to the past. Anti-modernism is that more. But then his view, he describes as non-modernism, so really non-modern rather than post-modern. And he says this is the right word because for him modernity has never really begun. So there, in spite of our language of this, there has never been a modern world. We've always had this hybridity. So if some people call themselves postmodern, for him, it means that this is kind of a wrong use of language, because how can we postmodern if modernity hasn't even started? You have to see also in historical terms is the reaction of 90s thinking against 70s, 80s thinking, where postmodernism was important. So this reaction against postmodernism. So it says like so this was a postmodern, the second anti-moderns. Well, he wouldn't say that he's anti-modern because they want to defend certain things against other things, but they keep the modern constitution, as he calls it, they keep that intact. So instead of postmodernism and anti-modernism, he goes for non-modernism and says that this is not known yet, because it needs to kind of, one could say with Heidegger's language, that it needs to be revealed. And he does this by showing that there's much more between all these poles, that they are connected, that the non-modern is there, so there's this whole unknown land that's there, but which we don't see because of our modernism. That also means that in retrospect, looking back at the history of philosophy for him, that all these people like Habermas and phenomenologists like Heidegger, but also Hegel, Kant, and so on, that they all, for him, they all are too modern. They all rely on this distinction, for example, by saying that the nature pole and the society pole are incommensurable. And so for him, this is quite a new move to say then that they belong together. So he sees himself as in this kind of history of philosophy. Especially in commensurability, of course, then something that he wants to criticize, right? Because his claim is exactly the opposite, that there is hybridity. So the claim that things can never come together is countered by him by saying that they are already together. Right? So this is the main contrast he works with. And empirically speaking, you could say that this is an application of what anthropologists have always done, but not in connection to science and technology, but in connection to so-called exotic, strange cultures. Because they have always said, like, well, we study what they call savages, right? People who don't have civilization, according to them, the old-style anthropologists. And so but when they studied these people, they didn't only look at culture in our sense of human high culture or something, but they also looked at artifacts, for example. So they always, anthropologists always studied the artifacts people used. So in that way, they were already busy with technology. But Latour says like they have always neglected to apply this to our culture. They have always made claims about these so-called savages, but they've never actually looked at our culture with the same eyes. And this is exactly what he proposes. So he proposes, like, if we take the glasses of these anthropologists, which in a way understood everything in what he calls a socio-technological network, then if we apply these glasses to our own society, we will see actually that the social and the material are also very much connected. So it's not only the non-Western culture, societies, people that have this hybridity between nature and society. We have it too. We just think we don't have, because we have these modern distinctions. So this is why I think that this anthropology is useful for him, and his particular version of the social is social technological networks, actor network theory. So this comes for him, with his background also as a reaction to anthropology. This way of saying is literally when anthropology comes home from the tropics in order to rejoin the anthropology of the modern world. So it comes home from the tropics and turns to the modern world, which is then can study in as non-modern. And he says, like, well, then we should also go beyond the divisions. We should actually apply a symmetry principle in the sense that we should talk about humans and non-humans and not just think that we have science and culture as separate things, whereas the others have don't have that. No, we also connect always nature and culture. We connect materiality with mind and so on. So it's not particular to certain peoples. So again, this means that certain views about modernity that are not non-modern are for him wrong. So, for example, the very romantic anti-modernism for him is wrong because he said, like, well, it can't be true that we disenchanted the world. Because we already have always had this enchanted laboratories, one could say, yeah? Because we had these hybrids already there. So the world has never been disenchanted. We are still non-modern, and this is the way we deal with things. Also in the laboratory of the scientists, it's not for him. The scientists not this a separate sphere where that has nothing to do with humans, society and culture. So when we have this new perspective, we can conceptualize what we're doing in a different way. And then he proposes this non-modern constitution, which makes connections between nature and culture. And politically, he draws the conclusion that that it means that these objects, these artifacts, these things should be represented in the political realm, because they're no longer mere objects, they're kind of quasi objects. They go a little bit more to the side of subjectivity. Because they actually one could say if you look at what things are around for him, it is a combination of these humans and non-humans. There are these hybrids and these monsters, and so you can't just say that these are mere objects, and neither can you say that they're mere subjects, because subjects that would belong to only to culture. Whereas objects to nature. So again, this is a way using other language of subjects and objects to make the same point that, that there is this non-modern hybridity. So in that sense, he can say if there is this hybridity, nature is constructed in society and politics is constructed in science. And if you think again about climate change examples, you could say the politics of climate change is constructed in science, because science has this huge influence on our politics. For politics, we really need to know, is the earth warming up, and if so, is this something special, is it more than before, and so on. And at the same time, nature is constructed in societies, because there will be political discussions about science, and so this is for him politics, a good example of politics in action, because the politics and science are here in a hybrid relation. So I leave it here for Latour, and I'm interested to see what you think about this, if his analysis in terms of non-moderns, we as non-moderns, as opposed to modern way of thinking, if this makes sense to you, and if you agree with Latour that it helps us to by conceptualizing things in a different way to arrive at a novel kind of view of what we are doing in science and technology. You can also just ask questions for clarification.
I have one question for clarification. Yeah. He often talks about this constitution, and he also calls official constitution, yeah. But this is just something he defines. It's not, I mean it in that way, he does not talk about something else, some official thing, but
that's right.
That's how he defines it.
Yeah, so we are used to think about constitutions as these written documents that constitutive, literally, of a political entity and are made by a certain political body. So this is for him. This is typical for the modern way of thinking, because we say that constitutions are only something that should be related to politics, where we define politics as something totally human, as opposed to nature. And so I think his play with this term constitution, applying it also to nature and culture together, is also to show that that nature is political, that science is political, and that's why he uses this term, constitution.
It can be also used in the form of the human constitution.
Yes, I would rather think about the constitution of the social here, because for him, the central question is maybe more the constitution of the social. But there are, as I indicated also with linking into post-humanism, there are these related moves one can make and saying like okay, this, if this is true, then the human is also hybrid or can no longer be defined as opposed to nature, for example. So, in that sense, there's a new constitution of the human too. So there's a new political constitution and a new constitution of the human. But that's already an implication, because at least in the book he doesn't talk so much about the human. You had a question.
No, so my actual question would be,
okay.
If he claims that there is, that the times we're living in are actually non-modern,
mm-hmm.
then they will be susceptible to this kind of treatment. Like, he is an anthropologist.
Anthropologist, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like, he would study some ancient culture.
Yeah.
So is he demanding a study of our times in this way? He would study an ancient dead culture in an anthropological mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think he would certainly agree with that. And I think it also makes sense, because if you look at archaeology, archaeology is a very interesting science in this respect, because it combines artifacts, so things that are human-made, with also some methods like more from the natural sciences. If it, for example, studies the age of a skeleton. And it's at the same time about human culture. It applies scientific methods to artifacts. And so there's a lot of hybridity there. Just as there is in anthropology, cultural anthropology is maybe, it depends how you do it, but I think in practice it is often also busy with artifacts. So I think both a historical kind of anthropology and also an archaeology is something that there could be the project of these disciplines could be interpreted in a Latourian way as revealing non-modernity, whether it's thousands of years ago or now, and the same methods could be used now. So imagine we now, there is a kind of, there's a disaster, right? And we just freeze a little bit like in Italy with the you know, the lava coming down and you can't move anymore and so on. And yeah. Then an anthropologist studies us, then that anthropologist will look at what's left of us, but it will that anthropologist will look at what is this kind of place, this building. We have chairs and they're all in this direction, and you use this pen and this paper, and there is computers and so on. And if it's in the far future, they would have to interpret what we do with these artifacts. And so they would kind of create, I would say, they would try to imagine our culture. But the way they do that would have to be by referring to our artifacts, because that's part of it, next to other things they know. So and anthropologists would make similar moves if it's a culture they don't understand the language or something. They would also have to see, like, okay, what kind of artifacts do they use? What do they do with them? And so. This is, I think, highly interesting for a philosophy of technology, because it makes us think about what is exactly this relation between artifacts and culture. Do they really belong to this different realm, or are they very much connected? And you see that already in anthropology and in archaeology, they are already connected. And so these sciences could help us to, from a Latourian perspective, to see this non-modernity, these hybrids, to bring them, to reveal them to the foreground. More questions? So, of course, also very specific language he uses to do all of this. So, a specific way of talking. I jumped into that, just as with Heidegger, one has to jump in his kind of language world to try to follow his arguments. More questions?
I actually have one more question.
Yeah.
The way he defines what a modern culture would be,
mm-hmm.
Is it even, because the modern culture lives from studies these particular things, and they cannot be connected, and there are no translation, and this is what it constitutes as modern.
Mm-hmm.
But can there even be, in this sense, a modern world? Because as long as humans are embodied and live in a material world, mm-hmm. also in societies, what, is there even a modern world? Because he says we are not yet living in this modern world, but can there even ever be a modern world?
Yeah.
Can we define it like that?
Good point. I think when he says when he uses this kind of language, like it hasn't even started, a more precise language, more Latourian language would be to say there never can be one, ever. I would agree with that, in, you know, taking these insights on board. So we can talk about it in a certain way, and of course that did shape and does shape our practices. We have different buildings, for example, for different kinds of sciences. Because we think about of these problems, we have also certain ethics and so on. So I do think that it really deeply influences the way we do things. But in the end, at a certain level of analysis, it seems to me, you know, very appealing to describe what we do in non-modern terms.
But then again, there was a change from, for example, he mentions Boyle
yeah.
and Hobbes.
Mm-hmm.
So from this age of
yeah.
so-called modernity to the difference to middle ages. And wouldn't it make sense to still use the word modernity? So maybe it's just an approach to try to separate the thing, even if it's not possible.
Yeah.
We could call that modern.
Yeah, exactly.
Try it.
Yeah. So it is modern to try to purify, to try to keep separate. Yeah, and so it doesn't, one could say then the implication is that it doesn't make the word modern meaningless, because it indicates a certain effort we do and concrete work we do, because he would also be the first to say that this is really, you know, concrete work. People do this work of purification in practice. So it's in that sense, modernity is not surreal or virtual. But on the whole, then even this kind of purification work becomes only visible and can be interpreted in this non-modern way. Yes. Yeah.
Mm. I mean,
beginning of the 90s.
The climate change is already being introduced as a primary political issue.
Mm.
It's a kind of already happened. There's a lag between what Latour wrote like 20 years ago and what's happening now. It's already been acknowledged.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess his point would then be that there will be always this new issues coming up, but one, I mean, maybe what you're alluding to is that, of course, his Latour's own book then fits a bit a historical time when actually people become aware of the political nature of nature. So one could say that, I mean, so once you have this approach, you can go back to the past and see also how things become political or become recognized as political. But I think what he wants is more an explicit recognition of things as political, and that's why he in his book Politics of Nature then proposes more of the same, of this parliament of things, so giving a voice to things. So that's a kind of follow-up, if you're interested in that approach, to see politics as, you know, having to do with hybridity, as a politics where things have their place and their voice. So he would like to not only have it as a kind of descriptive, as a kind of framework to then describe things in the past, but also as a project for the future to have a more explicit politics of things, rather than just having it going on, like in the case of climate change, but it being only partly recognized that this is about science and things mixed. Because you could say, even if we recognize that also today that climate change is a political problem, often politics is still interpreted in this merely human way. Science, for example, is still interpreted as being non-social, non-cultural, and so on. So his, I would say, if Latour says that climate change is political, this is sort of political in a stronger sense, you could say. So it's a stronger view than the modern, moderate one. We could make a distinction. Yeah?
How would he cope with the reductionist critique? Because on the one hand, he says that there is this distinction between nature and culture, but on the other hand, he kind of needs us to make up his concept of hybridism. So what would you answer to a critic who would say there is actually no nature, everything is culture?
I think for how I see it is that with this concept of hybridity, he avoids that. He avoids to call everything culture or call everything nature. So the critic who says everything is culture is in a way for him still too modern, because that critic kind of, you know, cancels the other half of the constitution, but doesn't really recognize the hybridity. So in Latour, there you could say that the poles are not totally gone, but bracketed or something. Because otherwise he can't make his argument about hybridity. Otherwise he would have to say that there's just this homogeneous social, right, or politics slash nature. But already, if I try to describe this, I use politics slash nature, so I use the both poles. So it could be that it's not possible to make explicit a Latourian view without having the modern distinction. To say what a non-modern is, he uses the modern. And sometimes he uses terms like monsters. You could at first sight that's bringing the two together and not having the poles anymore. But then if you think about it, the meaning of monster here is two things that don't belong together, but that are put together. And so the two things are in there. So apparently it's very difficult to not use these modern distinctions at all. And one could also question, are it just modern distinctions? Or are, you know, is it difficult for us to think beyond dichotomies at all? You know, maybe we need this to think or something. So there are wider issues here.
The political implications of modernism. He mentions in the paper when he talks about 1989, this year where the Berlin Wall fell.
Yeah.
And he said, well, this was. But additionally, in some climate conference, found out that this exploitation of nature cannot go on like this. So he says, I think the two political fundaments of nature is first the abolishment of the fetters of human slavery, enslavement by humans,
mm-hmm.
and second, the dominion over nature. And in this year, he said mm-hmm. both things were put into question because of these two.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall is also a good example of hybridity, right? So it's a political thing.
Yes.
Right, it's a thing. It's about materiality, the wall, but at the same time, political significance, and so on.
But by saying that this is the fundament of political modernity,
mm-hmm.
to get rid of this enslavement of humans by humans
mm-hmm.
and dominion over nature, and then he claims to be non-modernist. So would he say that this is not a noble endeavor? That's something that we should try to end. Enslavement of humans by humans. I mean, we could, of course, we have all seen that the dominion over nature didn't really work out, and now we have big problems. But
mm-hmm.
the first thing might be a thing to keep trying, not to just abolish it by saying, okay, we're non-modern, so let's stop trying that at all.
Well, his view would be that you can't do the one without the other if you. You have to stop.
Right, because he says we're trying to exchange the one for the other. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And if the one is not possible, yeah.
Then the other. So both hang together always for him. So yeah, if you stop the manipulation of nature or the exploitation of nature, then since then that's a social problem, and vice versa, the exploitation of humans by humans, he would also see as having to do with science, so both are for him connected, I think. But it's a good question to think about is what his view implies for human exploitation.
Because it's interesting when he says that the Western state nations feel that they achieved both
mm.
and forget that they achieved it both on the shoulders of the rest of the world,
yeah.
where mm. everything... So they are exploited,
yeah.
and the nature is destroyed.
Yeah, so you could say if there's exploitation, but there's one kind of exploitation, and it's an exploitation of humans and non-humans, I could say. And so modernity is based on an exploitation of humans and non-humans. Would that be a good way of formulating it?
The question would just be, what are his demands of normativity? What should we try to achieve? Then if that is not possible to get complete dominion over nature, does it make it really impossible? So is the exploitation of humans by humans just a necessity, therefore, and we cannot end it? Or does he even talk about that? Or?
As far as I know, I don't talk about that particularly, but I would say that I think his solution is to have, the normative point is to represent things as political, to give them a voice, and if we do that, presumably then we could also do something about exploitation of humans by humans. Because he would understand such processes of exploitation as involving humans and non-humans. So he wouldn't only talk about power as a merely human thing. He would talk about the way we exercise power in these networks of humans and non-humans, of actors and actants. So that would be, I guess, a Latourian analysis. Whereas the traditional ways of understanding exploitation and power wouldn't always take into account technology. In Marx, of course, technology is taken into account, but presumably he would see that as too modern still, the analysis. But one could then have a Latourian analysis of Marx. Now, how that would look like, I pass for the moment, but... Okay, then... Of course, we meet again next time. See you.